97.5, The Fanatic.
This is your home for Philadelphia Flyers hockey.
Rebound is
this is Fanatic Flyers Weekly, only on 97.5, The Fanatic.
And welcome into another edition of Flyers Weekly. It is Jason Martinez, as we're hoping the Flyers will get back on the ice tomorrow and resume the 2021 NHL season. We thought that would be the case today, but they were postponed and did not practice today. Maybe more a bit of abundance of caution. No new names added to the COVID list. It is still just seven. One name came off, one went on yesterday. That would be Travis Konecny, who went on, and Travis Sanheim, who went off. And oddly enough, Travis Sanheim was the first name to go on the list and didn't even play in the last game for the Flyers, which was 8 days ago against the Washington Capitals, that 7-4 win. So it's been 8 days since they've played, 8 days or 7 days now since they've practiced. Hopefully they'll be back at practice tomorrow, and they'll have a couple days to get on the ice, get back in as a group, and start working on some things, start building on some of the things over the last couple of games that they were able to accomplish, and getting their game back to a level where they like it. They like the result so far of 8-3-2. They didn't love the process, and it's kind of odd that they haven't played in 8 days, and they are still one of the teams in the division that's played the most games. Just about everybody in the division has played 13, except for the Devils and except for the Sabres. They're both in this COVID protocol postponement, lather, rinse, repeat cycle, as are the Flyers. And maybe that's even kind of where it started. Maybe it started for the Flyers against the Devils. And that's there has been a lot of contact tracing back to that Devils and Sabres series that led those two teams to be postponed. But everybody else now in the division, the Islanders, the Capitals, the Penguins, the Rangers, have all played 13 games. The Bruins have actually played the most at 14, and the Flyers at 13 here, 8-3-2. And despite the fact that they haven't played in a week, when we talked last Monday and the Flyers were coming off that win over the Washington Capitals, they were in the second spot in the East Division in the standings. We're sitting here now 8 days later since their last game, and they're still in the second spot in the East Division, and they still have a three-point cushion on the team in the third spot. That's the Islanders now, though. There's been some moving around here in the standings. Islanders and Capitals each with 15 points. They have identical records of 6-4-3, but the Islanders actually have one more regulation and overtime win. Penguins with 15 points as well. They're currently on the outside looking in because they only have four regulation and overtime wins. And then it's the New York Rangers down in the sixth spot with 11 points, and then the Devils and the Sabres. You really can't count them at this point. The Devils have only played nine games. They've played four less games than just about everybody in the division, five in the case of the Bruins, and then the Buffalo Sabres as well. But so we sit here 8 days later, and the Flyers holding their position in the standings. In just a moment, we're going to speak with former Flyer Danny Briere, who follows the team, works for the organization, runs the Flyers ECHL team. And interesting, you know, in texting Danny to get him on, he's back in school, which I thought was really interesting. Now, hockey players, and Danny Briere is a guy who started playing junior hockey at a very young age, so he didn't have the traditional schooling like that you and I would have, where we went to school when, you know, through high school and graduated. He's playing junior hockey, and it was a bit different. So we'll talk to Danny Briere about that and much more, including this season, and we've got three random questions for Danny as well. So we'll talk to him in just a couple of moments. But, you know, and listening to the station before the Flyers Weekly show began today, and again, it's been 8 days since they've played, so there's not a lot new here to unhatch from a, you know, breakdown standpoint. But I heard Andrew doing his update and saying, yeah, Wentz watch is still on, waiting for the trade of Carson Wentz. Indy, there's the preference for Wentz, and it's Indy and it's Chicago. And it just got me thinking, you know, all the drama that always surrounds the Eagles and the football team. And look, that's part of why the NFL is this monstrosity. And then I thought about that. I said, you know, I love the NHL and I love hockey, and I'm not a guy personally that likes the drama in sports anyway. I like sports for sports, like for what happens on the field of play or on the hardwood or in the diamond or on the gridiron. I'm using every cliche in the books, you know, on the 200x85 sheet of ice, whatever, right? That's why I watch sports. I don't watch it for all the stuff going on in the background and, you know, this player's mad at that player or drama and all that. That's not my preference, but I know a lot of people do like it. And maybe it's one of the reasons why I like the NHL so much, other than I just love the game and the sport. But I like the fact that there's not all that drama that there seems to be surrounding the football team all the time. So I don't know if people have a comment on that, but I like the fact that all that doesn't go on in the NHL like it seems to other person, which isn't to say it doesn't go on, because there are play, you know, Eric Carlson and his wife and Mike Hoffman's girlfriend, and there was all kinds of stuff, and there were guys a couple years ago in a cab, and it was recorded, and they were ripping the coach and the assistant and blah, blah, blah. You know, those things do happen, but just obviously not at the same level, or maybe they're just not covered here at the same level in the United States like they are up north in Canada. But I like the fact that that's not part of this game. I want the game to speak for itself more so than all the drama that tends to surround at least, you know, the Eagles. And I love the Eagles, and I love the NFL. That's just a part of it I don't like. So 610-632-0975. That is the number to get in here on Flyers Weekly. We can talk about all kinds of stuff. Tahoe this weekend. With the Flyers and the Bruins on Sunday. Is that game going to still be on? I think tomorrow's a really important day for that. Anything you want to talk about on the phones regarding the Flyers, hockey, the NHL, whatever, we can hit that as well. But let's get right now to our guest of honor on this episode of Flyers Weekly. He played 973 NHL games. It is Danny Briere. Danny, so close to 1,000 games.
It's you know, it would have been a nice number, no doubt about it. But it's not something that makes me lose sleep at night. You know, I was close when you count all the playoff games and the preseason games. I'm well above 1,000, but it definitely would have been a nice number to attain.
I never realized that you were on the 97 World Junior team that won gold, 2-0 final over Team USA, and won Brian Boucher. Yeah.
That's right. Played against Brian Boucher in that game. So I've been giving him a hard time about that for many years now, because we played together in Phoenix first and then back in Philly again. So I always tease him about that. But it was we actually tied each other in the prelim round. 4-4, I think the score was. Mm-hmm. And then in the final, got to play them again. It was a very tight defensive game, and Marc Denis stood on his head for us on the Canadian side.
No doubt about it. Danny, you're in school. You and I were texting about this. You went back to school. Were you a good student growing up? Because you got to your hockey career pretty early.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, a good student is relative. I guess things came easy. But I didn't like doing homework and projects and stuff like that. So that's the stuff that would get me in trouble.
So let me ask you, because you're in the Wharton Business School, and you're going to school for finance, I believe?
It's an executive degree. It's a management a degree, so you get to explore things with marketing, finance, strategy, and leadership. The leadership part is super, super exciting. A lot of good stuff to learn there.
What made you decide to go back to school? Because a lot of former athletes, you know, they don't make that choice. And but look, you chose a pretty good school in Wharton, right?
The first part was the challenge of it all. I like to have the challenge myself. So it wasn't easy. I mean, I had some college classes from my junior days. So it was scary at first when I was looking at the option of going back to school. But I said, no, I need to go. I want to go and push myself. The other thing, too, is after hockey, Paul Holmgren gave me the chance, along with Sean Tilger, they gave me the chance to get involved on the business side with the organization, which is very different than most players. They get involved on, you know, the hockey side with either coaching or development or scouting. So, you know, that was a little different for me. And I noticed really quickly that I was lagging a little behind, some of the people that I was working with at the office, and I wanted to catch up and understand a little bit more what they were talking about. So that's kind of the reason why I wanted to go back.
When you first went back and you were doing some in-person, did you walk into the class for the first time? Like, was that Danny Briere in our class?
There's been a couple, but I mean, in those executive degrees, everybody comes from a very different background that is pretty wild. I mean, I can't talk about who was there, but there's some people that were a lot more popular than I was, so it made it easy to blend in.
Wow, it's a secret society. I had no idea. But another club they won't let me in, Danny, but that's okay. Let me ask you about this season, because as a guy who played so many games, over 1,000, like you said, with playoffs and preseason and in a very long, very successful career, how do you think you would have been handling this situation where there's so much unknown as a player? Because, you know, there's postponements now, the no fans, but you are traveling and playing multiple games and buildings and sets, if you will. How would that kind of affected you as a player, do you think?
Well, you have to adjust and you have to adapt. And then, unfortunately, for a lot of hockey players, we like our routines. We like to know what's in front of us and what we're going to face day after day. We get comfortable falling into a routine, and that's probably been the toughest part for the players, not knowing, when they're going to play next, if they're going to play, all the everything that's being thrown at them left and right with the new rules and new regulations. So I've been actually really, really impressed at how the NHL and the players have adjusted throughout the last 11 months now of this pandemic. It's been impressive. I don't know how I would have reacted. I'm sure I would have found a way to adjust, kind of like the guys are doing, but I'm glad I didn't have to play, or I feel fortunate that I didn't have to play or I didn't have to face this kind of pandemic during my playing days.
Yeah, no doubt. The other thing that's interesting too is, you know, you play preseason games, you have a longer training camp, you can dial in your game over that period of time. And even in a normal situation, like you were involved in so many times, it still takes you, 10, 15 games into the regular season to really feel like you are where you want to be. That part has got to be really difficult for players to kind of, handle and kind of plan for.
Yeah, and obviously I'm going off of my personal experiences here. I loved playing a lot of preseason games because I was a player that I needed to feel comfortable on the ice. I needed to find my repairs, and you don't get that playing one or two games. You get that usually. Part of the reason why I was always a slow starter early in the regular season, it always took me, I felt, 8 to 12 games to really get into the groove in a regular season. So for these guys, starting right game one, no preseason this year, must have been a little scary. I know it would have been for me. And the other thing we don't talk a lot about is, with this pandemic, a lot of the gyms being closed, a lot of the rinks being closed, like the training to get ready for the season also must have been scary for these guys coming in kind of cold and expected to get on the ice and perform. So those are things that they've had to adjust and adapt, but probably a little scary for them as well.
Yeah, I imagine for goalies, just trying to find NHL caliber shots leading in when you have small groups on limited ice around North America and around the world really has to play a factor as well. For you, there's the physical side of it and feeling like your skills are getting dialed in, but there's also a mental side of it, of feeling like you're mentally ready, confident, and with all of your skills. And there's part of the equation as well, just in preparing mentally with a 9-day training camp and no preseason, isn't there?
Oh yeah, and it goes back a little bit with the routine. Hockey players like to have their routine. So, coming to the rink, wondering, the last few days for the Flyers, what's going to happen? Who can go on the ice? Who cannot? Are we going to play? When's our next game? Are we going to have that outdoor game? Those are all crazy things that, works in your mind, and it's got to be tough. It's the whole concept of it all, I think, is tough to deal with, but to me, very impressive how, like I said earlier, the NHL and the players have been handling it.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's talk about this team because they're off to an 8-3-2 start before this most recent pause and postponements. And they've gotten off to that start, Danny, despite not playing their best hockey. The process hasn't been what we saw it at its peak last year for sure. And they've also gotten off to that start without Sean Couturier. And to me, that makes that result even more impressive.
Correct. To me, like you said, the fact that, you know, Sean wasn't there has been missing. You know, the way, and I don't think Carter Hart has been as dominant as he was last year at times. And you know it's going to come at some point when he feels more and more comfortable. You know, and we all agree that what the coaching staff was able to do last year, and it didn't happen overnight. It took, you know, almost half the season for Alain Vigneault and his coaches to kind of put everybody on the same page. And when they started clicking, it was very impressive. And that gives me confidence that this year, what is happening early in the year, they're finding ways to win, maybe when they don't even deserve it. And you know he's going to fix that, and their coaches are going to fix that and make them better down the stretch. So that gives me a lot of confidence for this team as well.
Danny, I have a firm belief that in sports, good teams find ways to win when they're not at their best, and bad teams find a way to lose when they are at their best. Is that a little bit of the product of what we're seeing here?
Yeah, you're right on. And, you know, it's the difference is so small. You know, it could be a missed assignment here, or it could be a penalty there. Or, you know, it's so small. The difference between the good teams and the bad teams, there's so much parity in the league, as everybody knows these days. The last place team can beat the top place team on any given night. So you're right. The good teams, they just have that knack of finding that one play that'll make a difference. And the bad teams are on the opposite end of it. And that's why that gives me a lot of confidence that the Flyers, even though everybody agrees that they haven't played their best hockey and they've maybe missed assignments here or there, it's been impressive that they've been able to roll out to such a good record early in the season.
One of the things, too, that the fan base is going, well, this is a team that was so great at the end of last year. They really came into their own. There was very little turnover with the exception of Matt Niskanen, which was obviously a big loss and a couple of minor additions to the roster. But people assume that go year to year, well, they should just be able to pick up because there's not a lot of change. They know the coach's system. Year to year, it's different every time, though, isn't it?
Yeah. You lose that momentum. You have to restart from scratch. And the best example of that is the way the Flyers finished the regular season, or when, you know, this pandemic hit and everything went on hold. People expected this team to just roll back into the playoffs and be 100 miles an hour. And we saw that it was a struggle. You know, it was a struggle in the first round against Montreal. It got even tougher against the Islanders. So, you know, they just weren't able to recreate that magic. You know, and it takes time to do that. And that's why, again, that the Flyers right now might not be at their best, but it's a great sign that they're finding ways to win. You know, until the everything starts aligning and they can roll and play better down the stretch, hopefully again this year.
Yeah, make them a long-term team that's pretty tough to deal with. Three random questions for you now, Danny. First of all, why did you choose Philadelphia as your post-playing career home?
It's been home. And I knew when I signed as a free agent, I was not just, you know, picking up a place that I was going to play for the next duration of my contract, but I expected with the kids at the ages they were coming into their teenage years that it would become home for a long time. So the kids grew up here, their friends are here, they went to school here, and then I also met my wife during my playing days here, who's from Philadelphia. So there is no doubt for me that after my playing days were over that I was coming back to Philadelphia.
Random question number two. How important was it for you to play a season in Montreal? You played 69 games for the Canadiens, and I imagine when you walked into the Bell Center for the first time and your jersey was hanging in that stall, that was a pretty big moment for you.
It was. You know, and growing up a fan, a big Montreal Canadiens fan myself, it was pretty special to have the chance at least wear that jersey once in my career for a year. There's other things that came into play. It's obviously a lot of pressure to play there when you're a hometown boy, but I cherished it. I loved it. It was amazing, and nobody will be able to take that away from me.
Last random question for you, Danny. When Claude Giroux first came into the National Hockey League, you took him under your wing. He lived in your basement. Did you teach him parenting tips then? Because now he's got a second son on the way. I texted him. I said, now you got a D parent. He said, no, I got two PGA players.
Well, he got a little taste of fatherhood, I guess, during that year. He was great. The kid loved him. They had a fun kind of uncle relationship with him. So it was pretty cool. We had a blast. He was a great roommate. And what I liked about it is he kept me young and he kept me close to, the young players on the team. So I felt it really helped me having him around the house. And, hopefully now that it's his turn to be raising kids, and I'm going to be watching that closely.
As you look at it and you see him, obviously go through his career, which has been an astonishing career. The numbers they speak for themselves. And now raising a family, it's got to make you almost feel like a proud parent in a way with Claude as well.
Well, I'm really proud of, the way he became, this leader for many years with the Philadelphia Flyers. What he did, his career, I know I didn't have much to do with it, but it was pretty cool that, he came and lived with us for a few years, and I can say the same about Sean Couturier. So, definitely it's flattering to see and to have been part of their growth and part of their career.
Well, it, you're a big part of it, and you're a big part of the Flyers family, and you still are. So, Danny, best of luck with everything with the Executive MBA program at Wharton. We always appreciate you jumping on, and I love talking to you, and we'll definitely talk soon.
Well, same here, Jason. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
There he is, Danny Briere, joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Bounce forward. Always enjoyed talking to Danny. He's just one of those guys that's such a good communicator, a good guy. Was one hell of a player, too, I'll tell you. And I just thought it was interesting he's going back to school. That's really cool, I think. And I think his first reason that he stated was, I wanted the challenge. When you're a competitor and you no longer play games with a scoreboard, you're looking for your next challenge. And he decided to do that academically, which I think is just awesome. So thanks to Danny Briere for joining us on this episode of Flyers Weekly. And we're going to take a quick timeout. We're going to come back and let's load up these phones. Let's just talk some Flyers hockey. It's been 8 days since they played a game, but that doesn't matter. They're going to come back hopefully on Thursday, take on the New York Rangers. Then Sunday they'll be at Lake Tahoe for the outdoor game, the ODR game, outdoor rink game, against the Boston Bruins. And I just want to get people's thoughts on where they think this team is. Will this layoff hurt them? Are you like me? Do you like that fact that there doesn't seem to be the level of drama that follows the Flyers and the hockey team around like it does with the Eagles? 610-632-0975. All of those topics and anything else you have, we can talk about here on Flyers Weekly. 610-632-0975. We'll take a timeout. We're back after this right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
This is Fanatic Flyers Weekly.
And a friendly score on the rebound. Claude Giroux deposits it into the empty goal.
97.5 The Fanatic.
And welcome back to Flyers Weekly right here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Let me tell you, first and foremost, 6 o'clock hour is brought to you by Family & Company Jewelers. Visit them on Route 70 in Marlton, New Jersey, or at familyjewelers.com, South Jersey's diamond destination. Here's the number, 610-632-0975. I got an interesting question because Nat Marlowe, our producer back at the station, I'm at the home studio, and I were talking. We were talking about Danny Briere, and that he's just one of those guys that's really likable, great communicator, was a really good player, was clutch. I mean, clutch as clutch gets, right? His performances in the playoffs, he just raised the level of his game. Always a good player, but a great player, a great playoff player. He just knew how to take his game to the next level on the biggest stage. And that you said to me that your mom loved Danny Briere. Now, why did she connect with Danny Briere?
I think she connected with Danny Briere because, well, one, on the top tier talent that Danny Briere was, and two, just he's just one of those guys you can tell is a genuinely nice guy.
Made her a fan.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like she'll always talk about Danny Briere. I mean, he's been retired for how many years now? Like what, six seasons in the NHL now? Yeah, and five, it seems like every day I'll get a text from her. If it's not about the Flyers now, it's probably something about Danny Briere because that's how much he loves him.
That's great. But I think that's interesting. So I want to ask the question to the audience and get your reaction to it at 610-632-0975. There oftentimes is a singular player. You know, when you grow up in Philadelphia, we fall in love with the laundry. And that's our birthright, is to be an Eagle, a Flyer, a Sixer, a Philly fan. Because those are our teams, our provincial teams. That they're our geography. It's where we live. It's the people that we interact with the most, for the most part, are also fans of that team. So you're a part of something that's bigger than just you as a singular fan. But a lot of times it is an individual player that maybe you are a fan of the team, but to take you to that next level, it is an individual player that you connect with in some shape or form. Now, that can be because the player plays a certain position. That can be because a player carries himself on or off the field of play in a certain way, whether they're a really aggressive player like Ron Hextall was with the Flyers, or like Rick Tocchet was, or you know, or a super skilled player. It's kind of just what you identify with as a fan. And there's certain players that through our youth growing up that we connect with in different ways. And we can usually point back to one person and say, that player is the reason why I'm a huge fan of this team. So for Flyer fans, who is that player that you connected with instantly that took you from being a birthright fan to being a diehard fan? Now, for me, it was Pelly Lindbergh. And, you know, as a kid, you know, in 1981 and or 82 and 83, when he really came in, and then up to his tragic death in 1985, he wasn't here that long, but it was a tremendous impact on me. And then Ron Hextall after that. And as a kid, I was already playing hockey. I was a goalie, so I was gravitating to that position anyway. And, you know, those guys I connected with right away. I remember the first time I experienced loss as a kid that I remember was when Pelly Lindbergh passed away, when he had the accident and eventually passed away, and they took him off life support. And it was impactful. I still have the articles here somewhere of the newspaper articles from when that all took place. So that was the guy for me. Now, Nat, who was it for you? It was Danny Briere for your mom, but for you it was who?
Oh, that made me a diehard fan. I got to go Wayne Simmonds, because once he was traded here, he played with that extra amount of grit. I like players that can do it all, even if they're not necessarily the best at one thing. Guys who can do it all. Because Wayne Simmonds, if you need him to score, he can score. You need him to hit, he can hit. You need him to fight, he can fight. And if you need him on the power play, he can do that. Because how many power play goals has he scored? I mean, hundreds at this point.
Yeah.
And it's just everything he has gone through just to get to play in the NHL, and just that determination factor. And he's also another guy, just a genuinely nice guy. I was fortunate enough to meet him at the Flyers Carnival about 2 or 3 years ago. And again, like just such a genuinely good guy and a true inspiration in my life.
Yes, and that's a great one. I mean, he's a prototypical Flyer, right? He's the DNA of the organization. So who are those guys, for anybody listening, at 610-632-0975, that took your fandom from just being your birthright fandom into being the diehard fan that you are now? 610-632-0975. It's a fascinating question. Let's get to the phones, and we start off on the telephone lines with Colin in Delco on the Fanatic. Hey, Colin.
Hey, Jason. John LeClaire is that flyer for me. That guy can rack up goals. Perfect winger for Eric Lindros. But I want to talk about the 2022 Olympics over in Beijing. I'm excited for the NHL to get back. I'm thinking about which flyers could make the rosters. I have Voracek and Provorov definitely to go, but I'm thinking Couturier, Hayes, and Carter Hart are kind of fringe players on these rosters.
I think Couturier absolutely should be on Team Canada. He plays for Team Canada, even though he's a dual citizen. He was born in Arizona.
Right.
But he spent a lot of his youth in north of the border, so he plays
most
for
likely
team.
Being a bottom six role for them, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, he's a guy that can do a lot for a team like Team Canada. Carter Hart, I believe, absolutely will be on one of the three goaltenders for Team Canada. I think you're right about Provorov. He's absolutely going to be on the Russian team. Kevin Hayes on Team USA, I don't know. That's going to be, I'd say that's unlikely. There's a ton of skill coming on Team USA. I mean, you've got Austin Matthews, Patrick Kane. There's going to be a lot of, and plus if you look at Team USA down the middle, and they're going to have some young guys coming into that role as well, guys like Jack Hughes. So, and Quinn Hughes will be on that team as a defender. But who was the other guy you mentioned? Did I miss one of them?
Hayes, Couturier, Hart, Provorov, Voracek.
Yeah, well, Voracek will definitely be on the Czech Republic team, absolutely.
Right, do you think I believe David Krejci would be their captain. Do you think Voracek could wear the A for them?
Sure, absolutely. As a veteran that's, you know, been playing, you know, at a high level for a really long time, absolutely. I mean, he wears an A for the Flyers. I think he could wear an A for the Czech Republic team. And just a question of whether Jaromír Jágr is going to still be playing or not at this point.
Okay, do you think Team USA has a chance?
Yes.
Against Canada or any of the other competitors.
Absolutely. I want to see this Team USA team because if you look at the players that the United States has been producing, and we saw it in the World Juniors, you know, for them to beat Canada and with Trevor Zegras and Cole Caulfield and who's going to
work with Bobby Brink.
Yeah, I don't know. Bob Brink's not going to be on the. He was on the World Junior team. Yeah, he's not going to be on the Olympic team.
But
I absolutely think. I mean, Team USA is not a team that just should be happy to medal in a tournament anymore. They're a team that's got gold aspirations year in and year out. And they got great goaltending with John Gibson, I think, will be their starter, who's a really good goaltender with Anaheim, and I think he would be Team USA's starter. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're a team that absolutely can compete on that stage, and they should expect to compete on that stage. And frankly, as Americans, we should expect them to be able to do that. I mean, they've won four golds in the last 10 years at the World Juniors, 11 years, so absolutely. And I love your – thanks for the call, Colin.
Do we know –
go ahead. Oh, sorry. I don't know what he was going to ask. Do we know? But I don't know what he was going to ask, so I can't answer it. But I love the player that he said, John LeClaire, right? Speaking of great American-born players, you know, John LeClaire out of Vermont. And he was just this straight line, simple game with a huge, heavy shot. Guys would try to check him. They'd bounce on him. They'd just falling down. And yeah, he was a really likable player as well. And he's one of those guys for a lot of the fans that are younger than me, for sure, that were young in those years with Lindros and LeClaire and all those guys that I'm sure a lot of people took their fandom from the birthright fan to being a super fan because of a guy like John LeClaire. Absolutely. That's a great one. Let's go to 610-632-0975. Let's go to Drew in Lafayette Hill on the Fanatic. Hey, Drew.
Hey, Jason, you there?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. To your question about the player taking your fandom to the next level, that would be Lindros for me.
That's a good one.
Just a force to be reckoned with in that time period. I haven't seen a player like him since.
I don't think you will either. You know what's crazy, Drew? I look at Lindros' game and go down the YouTube rabbit hole. I've gone down it, you know, especially during the pause in sports, where you sit there and you watch old Lindros videos, and I'm going, I don't know if a player like him could play in the league anymore because he was so big, so strong, so powerful that when he hit guys, even though they were clean hits, guys would get hurt. So I don't know if that player would be able to – I think they'd be suspended all the time because they would think it's a dirty hit because he was so big, so strong, and so powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. The guy that's married up with him that also really took my – love for the Flyers to another level was Forsberg, because they're linked with the trade, and Forsberg came to the Flyers later on in his career. And another guy that you could dive down the rabbit hole of YouTube, you know, indefinitely, just a great player.
Absolutely. He was a tremendous hockey player.
The Flyers' depth this year is one of the things that really intrigues me, and I hope the break that they have with the COVID doesn't affect them too adversely. But I've never seen a Flyers team recently that have the depth that they have at forward, and you know, a pretty good dynamic defenseman in Provorov. D is the only thing that kind of worries me a little bit, our thinness at D. But I'll hang up and let you go, and great stuff. I'll talk to you later.
I appreciate it. Let me comment on Forsberg first, because in his years in Philadelphia, I mean, it seemed like he was almost riddled with injuries. He couldn't find the skate that could fit his foot right, because he had the problem with his the way he termed it was, I don't feel like the skate's on my foot. And they just get Derek Settlemyer, and they just kept trying to find ways for this skate to feel right on his foot. But even with that, he played 100 games for the Flyers in the two seasons he was here. So 100 total games. He was here, and he was traded, obviously, to Nashville in that second season after midway point. But in 100 games, and despite the fact that he was not the dominant player he was prior to that, he still had 115 points. Still more than a point-per-game player. 30 goals and 85 assists in 100 games. And he was such a unique player in the way he played the game. And there was nobody better at the reverse hit, where a guy would try to come up and hit him, and he would jump back into the player. And boy, he was tremendous at that. Such a good player. So talented. And, a really good guy as well. And it makes you wonder. I mean, the two players that he just brought up on the call there that, you know, took him to that level, Drew, were traded for each other, basically. Lindros, you know, Forsberg's part of the deal to get Lindros with Quebec. And Lindros was such an incredible dynamic talent and just powerful and just dominant physically. But then, you know, you get Forsberg later in his career, so you had both of them, and both of those players, and it's just amazing that Drew had no resentment for either with those two players over the years, but the two great ones for sure. As far as the COVID protocol list, I mean, the Flyers, seven players on the list still, and I mentioned off the top of the show that Travis Sanheim's name, who was the first member in this particular situation for the Flyers to go on the COVID list. Now, Shane Gostisbehere was on it to begin the season, obviously came off and was playing prior to them being postponed here. And then Travis Sanheim, name was added to it, I believe the day after, a week ago today. And then that's when things started, okay, we're going to shut down the facility, because then there were other names added to the list. And since then, Travis Sanheim's name's come off the list. That happened yesterday. And Travis Konecny's name was added to the list. So seven players in total. Justin Braun, who went on it, I believe, last Tuesday. Claude Giroux on the list. Travis Konecny, I just mentioned. Oscar Lindblom on that list. Scott Laughton, Jake Voracek, and Morgan Frost. And I mentioned last week as well, I think Morgan Frost is on it because he traveled to Colorado for a surgery for his shoulder. So there's you automatically go on the list when you travel to certain areas. So I don't know. He hasn't been around the team, so I don't know if that's part of a contact tracing thing. And again, we don't know any of these players who has tested positive. We don't know if they're just on the list, kind of in a holding pattern, waiting to see if they do because of contact tracing or exposure. You have to assume, obviously, somebody tested positive. I don't know who that is. We may find that out, whether that player, it's their decision to make that information public or not. Shane Gostisbehere opted to, and he actually, I talked to him on Flyers Daily a couple weeks back when he first got back, and you know, he did have some symptoms. I don't know who the positive players are, and are they experiencing symptoms? Are they asymptomatic? We don't know any of that. So when they come back to play, what is the effect on these particular players? Because there are obviously professional athletes that are symptomatic, and it does take time to rebuild strength, just like if you had the flu, or I'm not saying this is the flu, but varying symptoms to varying degrees can affect endurance and those kind of things. And so we'll find out what that is, perhaps in more detail as we go through the next couple of days. The Flyers were supposed to practice today, Monday, It was called off earlier this morning, from what I understand, at the behest of the team or the league or the team, and maybe an abundance of caution. But they are scheduled to practice tomorrow at 11 a.m. And if they're going to play Thursday, they need to get back on the ice tomorrow. I can't imagine a scenario where they play Thursday, having been off the ice for 10 days and only have one practice. So I would think if they're going to play Thursday against the New York Rangers, they got to be at practice tomorrow. And again, what players are going to be available? Now, they do have expanded roster, the taxi squad, and the Flyers did recall Maxim Sushko and somebody else. I can't recall who it is off the top of my head, to their taxi squad. But we'll see. We'll see who's available come Thursday, and we'll see who's available if they should play Thursday and then play on Sunday in the game out at Lake Tahoe, which will be really interesting. You know, the league is, if the Flyers are not available to play in that game, then they would have to make some sort of change in the schedule, and perhaps it would be the New York Rangers who would go out and then take on the Boston Bruins and get the experience of playing in a true ODR, an outdoor rink, out on Lake Tahoe, which, by the way, looking at the pictures that the NHL is putting out and the way it's going to look out there and the panoramic scenery, it's going to be incredible. So I hope the team's a part of it. But we'll see. And we'll see what players, Alain Vigneault, are available. And based on who's not available, who he puts in the lineup. Could we see a guy like maybe Zaid Wisdom, who did sign an entry-level contract and has been playing with the Phantoms and having some success there as well. So how he kind of deals with this. And again, these games, whether they have a shortened roster or not, if, you know, Justin Braun, Claude Giroux, Travis Konecny, Scott Laudon, Oscar Lindblom, Jake Voracek are not available, they're still going to count in the standings. So you still got to find a way to win games. And, you know, the standings are tight. And as I mentioned earlier in the show as well, even though the Flyers have not played now in 8 days, they've still maintained, from a points perspective, their second spot in this East Division. Boston was really grooving, and they hit a little bit of a skid, if you will, and not quite as hot as they were. But the Bruins are a team still sitting at the top of the division, having played one more game than the Flyers, one more game than pretty much everybody in the division. But the Boston Bruins are a team. They lost their last one to the New York Islanders on Saturday. But boy, they were steaming before that, 5-game win streak. We'll see if they're supposed to be in action tonight against the New Jersey Devils. That's obviously postponed. Thursday's game was supposed to be against the Devils. We'll see if that is postponed for them as well coming up Thursday. But they may have a big break as well, an 8-day break from the game on Saturday to the game Sunday against the Flyers. So if that game Thursday is postponed, then they're going to be on an eight-game break as well. And Flyers may not be if they end up playing on Thursday night against the New York Rangers. It'll be our first look at the Rangers as well, which I think is an intriguing team to look at. They're not off to a good start. Mika Zibanejad has not gotten off to the start that he had hoped for. He was so good for the Rangers in that second half last year. I mean, if they wouldn't have paused the season, he maybe could have gotten to that range where David Pastrnak and Alexander Ovechkin were in goals. He was really just playing incredible hockey and willing that team to winning a lot of games. He hasn't been as good so far this year. We'll see if he's able to get his game back, but that's an interesting team here going forward. And then obviously this is the first show that we've done, Flyers Weekly as well, where the big addition was named in Pittsburgh with Ron Hextall as the GM and Brian Burke as the president of hockey operations. And listening to that press conference with Hextall and Brian Burke, it led me to believe that the Penguins are going to do what they can to try and take a kick at the can once again here this season and then see where they are and make some decisions, whether it be a rebuild or a retool, whatever you want to call it. They got some decisions to make. Chris Letang and Evgeny Malkin's contract can both be extended after this season because they have 1 year left beyond this. So we'll see what they decide to do. But obviously a very interesting hire there. And congrats to Ron Hextall and Brian Burke for getting that gig and be able to lead the Penguins. But there's a lot of work to be done in that organization as they try and keep the window open. Is it open is another question for another show, maybe in another city. But here in Philadelphia, we're worried about our window and how far is it open and what can take place coming up in this abbreviated season and also beyond. So that's going to put a wrap on Flyers Weekly. We'll be back again next week, next Monday, for another episode, as hopefully we're reacting to that game against the Bruins in Lake Tahoe. And we'll be able to recap that game and maybe a game Thursday against the New York Rangers as well. All right, a few people to thank before we get out of here. We start with our producer back at the station, Nat Marlowe. And we have Devon coming up next, right?
Yes, Nat, sir, Devon Givens.
And he's going to take you right up to Sixers Hoops tonight, correct?
Yep, and that'll start at 9 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
There you go. So busy night on The Fanatic. Stay tuned. Devon is up next. Everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. And thanks to Danny Briere for joining us on this episode of Flyers Weekly. We'll talk to you next week right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.